Session number 8335.
Colonel Steele, Real 2.
When you were going up to the fort with the Cypriot muleteers, was there any sort of recognised or marked pathway, or was it just a case of scrambling?
No, I'm sure I can recall there was a rocky track on which it wound in and out, you know. But there was an absolute definable track all the way there.
What sort of interval did the mules keep between themselves?
As far as I can remember on this one, they're all fairly close together. I mean, I don't necessarily say there was a string of mules halfway down the hill, because one was only concerned with one's own bit, you know. But there was control muleteers keeping them moving, you know.
Could you see the enemy positions from the track as you were going up it?
This I don't really remember. I think one was finding one's way on where you were going. There was a fort up top. How long is it going to take to get there? There was certainly some shelling going on. And there was, I can remember the outline of this great massif of, you know, the other hills, which Sandshill and Zaban and Falisterre, which were round about, all dominating even the fort. And one was just getting up to that sort of level. I don't think at that stage one had got far enough up to be able to define any other positions. Although I say there was plenty of activity on the shelling front.
Were we shelling as well as the Italians?
We were. I mean, at that moment, exactly were. I mean, we had our artillery down at the bottom. 4th Field, who were our gunners all the war, virtually, till they went in the bag in the desert. But that, I think, looking back, when one got into the fort, the thing one remembers mostly, it was artillery and mortar fire and duels, rather than any particular infantry activity. That's what I can remember, you know, because the fort, which was a very shallow trench all the way around, and one lived in here, C Company, which I went and joined, a chap called Tubby Fisher, who was a captain, was forward of the fort, and we were in little stone sangers there. And there was fairly incessant mortaring or artillery fire going on much of the time. They were very good gunners, the Italians.
Was the fire accurate? Did they manage to put shells into trenches and behind sangers?
Certainly, when one shells burst just above one, you know, on the top of the fort, which was a sort of flat plateau, and really that was the top of Fort Donegallock, and the actual trenches were all the way around. And we had sangers forward of that on the ground falling away. And I can well remember that there were a couple of extremely dead Eritreans, only about 100 yards away or less, which one couldn't get out and move, got increasingly strong, you know, day by day, because it was very hot by day. This was March, and it was bare rock, and it got very, very warm during the day.
What was it like by night?
As far as I can recall, it was a sort of just chilly at night, you know. I don't recall having any, we had any great problems. I'm sure we had pullovers or whatever, you know. But it was everything was so new. One just arrived here. One was absorbing the situation, and there was shelling and mortaring going on, and the various activities, and there were patrols from other people, like the Camerons, going down here. The road was way forward and below us, where there was a roadblock, and there were various patrol activities going on. But as far as we were concerned, we went forward and did, I think, a bit of patrolling in our company front. We were fairly static. And then we were only there, after I'd arrived, a matter of days before the move forward started.
What happened when you first arrived then, when you arrived at the fort and reported?
I'm sure we must have been there for some time, because this is the particular picture I have of meeting Bill Langren, the CEO, and Billy Armour, who now was Colonel Reginald Artem, now did, great friend of mine, Brigadier Armour, who was then adjutant. He was, what, 21, I suppose. And having this period of pretty intense mortaring going on, I suppose it was... we were there because we couldn't at that stage go forward. That was it. And Bill Langren, very calm and everything, and just offering one a cigarette out of your, out of his case, and one just smoking it and saying, well, this is obviously the way to behave, and I need to be done. And I vividly remember that. And so that was a fairly intense introduction to being in the fort. And after that, I think one was told, right, now you join C Company and somebody would take you round. And I went round in the trench and then forward and into our sangers. And that's where we were more or less based from then on.
What was your job then when you arrived? Were you given a
platoon commander
to command?
I was a platoon commander in C Company. Can't remember whether it was 9 platoon, one of the platoons there. And one had trenches, you know, a series of trenches, stone sangers. And one got to know your platoon as best you could.
How did they receive you?
Oh, I suppose as another rather young officer arrived, you know. I don't think one, in those circumstances, you get, you, as it were, dig into the formation you're in, the platoon, as quickly as you can, you know. But
your men were regular, weren't they, the 2nd West Yorkshires?
As a battalion, yes, they were. I mean, whether... March 41, I doubt if there had been a lot of... There would have been a few volunteers come up, not many by that time, to the Middle East. I mean, I'm thinking of volunteers coming, you know, at the beginning of the war, if you weren't in the if you were in the TA, you were already in the battalion, you see, one regiment. So anyone who just got called up or volunteered immediately the war was started, I doubt if many of them would have got to the out to the Middle East by then. No, I'm sure they were all regulars.
What were your orders then? Were they just to hold your particular stretch?
That's right. And I think there was activity, as far as I can remember. I don't remember the exact detail, but there was enemy activity, people about, you know, this sort of thing. There was a very splendid chap who was in, a sergeant, I think, Thornley, who got the Distinguished Conduct Medal a bit later on, became a sergeant major, And although this is a bit of an aside, it's perfectly true that when they got into the fort, this is several days before I got there, that they found an Italian field cashier dead and trapped him with a suitcase which is absolutely full of lira notes. And of course, I believe at the time everyone said, well, lira will not be used as a currency when we get to Asmara, you know, but in fact it was. So I think some of the wiser ones managed to acquire a few. The rest of it was all handed in. But I remember him very, very well, Thornley, because he was a dominating, excellent. He commanded one of the 3 platoons.
What about the other platoon? Was there an officer for that?
Don't remember. I know there was a very excellent young chap, Morgan, but he got hit in the leg, and I think he lost his leg in the end. I think he was in A Company, which was Michael Osborne, who had physically taken the fort. But the impressions at that time are fairly fleeting. Some, like being in your stone sangers, you know, at the Shelling, seeing the dead Eritreans not very far away, this sort of thing. Those are all fairly well etched, and the amount of gunfire. But one didn't see a lot of physical movement, because where they put in various counterattacks, these were usually by night, and they didn't succeed. But there were several counterattacks put in by the Italians.
Did these happen while you were actually there?
Yes, they did, but I don't think they happened on our particular, as I recall it, on our particular platoon front. I mean, there was another company, I think, to our left. I can't remember which it was.
How big was the garrison of the fort?
Well, it was just
entirety.
The battalion. Less. I'm not sure the whole battalion was in, and obviously a lot of it was down the hill, the A echelon, so it must have been fairly small.
How wide a front did your platoon have to cover then?
I'm just now trying to recall this. It's a detail I don't remember. Not very far. I mean, you were really using the broken ground and this sort of thing. I don't suppose it could have been more than a few hundred yards.
And looking over or round your sangar, how far ahead could you actually see?
You could see, as I do remember, down ahead of you, and finally down there, there was the road which went into Kerin. Now, this is what made, I suppose, Fort Dolagardoch the key feature of the movement. I mean, unless you took the fort, you couldn't possibly have advanced down the road, because you were literally dominating it and looking down there. There were higher features, as I say, of the three great peaks there. But those are far enough back. They gave it observation, hence the mortar and gunfire. But I don't think they dominated the road like the fort.
And how steep was the slope down to the road then from your
positions? Very steep. I mean, the hill went away, and then one didn't see the full drop. And then down there, hundreds of feet down, was the road winding away.
So some of it was sheer?
I would say some of it must have been sheer forward of us, and one couldn't see more than because of the contours. You know, the contour went down.
Had the ground along that slope been cleared to form a glacier, or was it still dotted with cover? Was there any vegetation? Were there rocks?
I don't remember any vegetation. I don't remember any vegetation up there, whether there were bushes, but there's nothing that comes to my mind now, you know. It is essentially stone country. You know, the top of a fairly high peak, really, with this sort of trench, which I suppose the Italians had blown, because it is mainly rock. You know. Narrow, quite shallow trench. And forward of that, where we were, as I say, stone sangars, no cover from a point of view of digging in.
How high were your sangars?
3 or 4 feet.
And how many men would each sangar contain?
Oh, I think that, having seen these and later on the way to Cairn, 3 or 4 men, this sort of thing.
So for a platoon, you'd have about 10 to a dozen of them?
I doubt if a platoon was as strong as that.
Do you remember how many?
30 or 40? No, I don't remember. I don't remember, no. I remember later on when one was going up to Teclisan, when one platoon, you physically saw it. I mean, all the time one was in the fort, one was platoon with little blobs of men who didn't get up, and you didn't marshal them into a platoon blob. You know, they were there undercover. This was only, you see, a matter of 4 days or so.
Were you ever taken on an actual tour of all your sangars in your...
Oh, I'm sure we were, yes. I'm sure one not only did that, one went round oneself. I mean, I don't give the impression that one was locked in one's own sangar. I mean, it was impossible anyway, because watering and feeding and replacing ammunition... No, I mean, there was movement there. And as far as I remember, there was more movement by night. You know, this sort of way. But what I meant was, you didn't assemble your platoon in the ordinary way. And so,
had these sangars been built by your regiment or by the enemy?
I would have doubted if they'd been built by us, because it was A Company who were the first into the fort. And the several, I think the Marathas tried first, and I think the HLI, and then the A Company took it. And they were very heavily occupied in being in the fort itself. It was only later, you know, to see off counter-deck when more troops came up. So I'm almost certain that those sangars were part of the original position.
Were they well sighted from the point of view of arcs of fire overlapping?
Do you know, I really can't remember. One could only guess they were, that they'd been put up and they were constructed stone sangars. And so one would, of all the rocks and things there, one can only assume that they were in selected spots, you know.
Were they solid? Were they solid?
Oh, very solid, yes. I mean, these are fairly great hunks of rock lying about.
How far forward were they of the main trench?
The main fort. I would think that they were 200 or 300 yards forward. That being the top. I mean, if you think of a plateau and then just below the crest, you've got the fort round there, really, going round in and out, and then falling away on all sides. On the back side was where the track came up with the muleteers and things, and forward that more gently, but then sloping down to the road, or where the various sangers were.
This trench that you mentioned, was it in a geometric pattern, or did it conform to the contour?
No, it was a contour pattern. And it was in and out like this. And as I certainly didn't walk around the whole of the perimeter of that. One had no cause to, you know, but one went round to the left-hand side because that was the way to go to Sea Company. But it was in and out, and it followed literally the contour of, 20 feet down from the top of the hill.
Was it just a single trench?
A single trench.
There was no support line then?
No, I'm sure there weren't. I remember getting into this, you hopped in, and then you were there. You were in this shallow, grey to white sort of trench, a lot of dust and stuff. And a lot of the mortifiers, you either went over the top of the gunfire, or it hit the plateau above one's head. Or it was forward where the companies were. You know.
Could you actually see any of the guns or mortars that were firing at you?
No, I don't remember seeing any. I think you saw flashes. Yes, but in a flash, I'm sure the observation officers were taking crosses on these, and you know, for actual counter-gunnery. But we weren't... I recall that one did see flashes, especially at night, obviously, you know, from as I say, it was an intense period, and this particular period for me was only perhaps very brief, 4 days. And then suddenly the plug was out.
Did your platoon have any casualties from mortar or artillery fire?
I don't recall now. No, I don't recall at that stage. I think that I think we were probably quite lucky after the original assault on the place, you know, where the casualties were. There were certainly mortar casualties and gunfire since then, but I don't recall having any in my little lot.
Did you manage to establish a sort of daily routine while you were out there for those 4 days?
Yes, I'm sure we did. As I say, that is hazy to me now, but thinking, you know, projecting oneself forward, I can't believe that we didn't have... we had to have a routine anyway from the point of view of replenishment of water bottles, you know, food, ammunition, because there's still firing going on here and there. But it's fairly hazy, that. As I say, there are certain pictures one has which are very clear, and the rest of it are impressions.
Do you remember actually seeing any targets yourself? Forward of your own
sight? Not now, I don't, no. As of this moment, I can't actually picture them.
So you just occasionally hear firing or movement at night when an attack or
there
a
raid? There was certainly firing from the point of view of artillery fire, mortars all day, and spasmodically, you know. I don't remember now, at this stage, although I'm not saying there weren't, that actually physically... I remember seeing these corpses lying about because we were very inconvenienced by them. I don't remember seeing any movement up on that particular part of the fort.
Did you go out at all on patrol?
We were going out in a matter of only a few hundred yards in front of the position, just to make sure that there's no, you know, counterattack building up just behind or wherever. But...
That was a security patrol.
It was a security patrol, that's all. We weren't doing long-range stuff.
How many of you would go out on such a...
I think one used to go out, or maybe a section or half a section would just go forward to see if there was any movement.
Did you ever see anything?
No.
How long would such a patrol take you to clear the area?
Well, I don't think anybody went forward because of the nature of the ground, more than a few hundred yards. And so it wasn't a long business... Listening posts, as much as anything.
So it's mainly at night, was it?
Mainly at night. Oh, yes. I mean, you could see anything, you know, by day. One had a fairly commanding view. I seem to remember that there were, but they weren't on our front, further down to the left. I think it was B Company. There was some counterattack down there, but one was holding a fairly limited area of the forward of the fort.
Did you have regular stand-tos?
Oh, yes. Yes, we did. I mean, I don't remember when they were, but certainly the normal thing before dawn and, you know, in the evening.
During this four-day period, did you see very much of your company commander?
Yes, very much. I mean, I think one, Tabby Fisher, one was... I mustn't give the impression one was just inside the Sanger and didn't move about. I mean, we were going round and there was quite a lot of noise. Certainly we saw Tubby endless times a day, you know. We weren't totally inert or sort of, I say, locked in our Sangers.
When you'd been at the Octo in Cairo, had you done any study of mountain warfare?
No. I don't think we had. I mean, we must have had some lectures on this. Yes, I said that rather quickly. Let me put it a different way. I can't recall any particular part of the syllabus there, you know. One was learning a complete new field, and every day was new. And although I said rashly, no, we must have, clearly, in the context of knowing that people were going off to East Africa, must have done something on that, but nothing particularly sticks in the mind.
What was it like trying to sleep up there? Did you manage to get good rest at all?
I'll have to put that rather passively. I don't recall ever having problems in this way. I'm sure we slept partially by day. If there was shelling at night, then you're awake, and there were alarms or false alarms, maybe of possible counterattacks, then maybe half the night you're up, standing down. So I think one took a day in the round. You slept when you could. I don't think to that extent nor any set periods, you know.
And what about feeding? Were there regular times for feeding?
I don't really recall, as I say. Perhaps I'm sounding as though I don't remember anything, but it's, some of these details are blank and others are vivid, as I say. I don't remember any of that. So we'd had these 4 days, and then, as I say, the thing broke and the move suddenly started forward. Now, I think it must have been troops of one of the other brigades that started the move.
You mention in your notes giving covering fire during the breakout.
Yes, I was talking as a battalion as a whole, that we were here with the troops going forward, as far as I remember, the tanks down there.
They
were going along the road, which was, of course, eventually the end of way, you see. But it was a very... Suddenly one was on the move. You know, there was organized chaos, if you like. Right, we're moving forward now. Then,
how much warning did you get?
Nothing very much. I think that I suppose it was an opportunity to attack the moment had come to go through, and then the attack took place, and we were following up behind. Now, it can't have been more than a couple of days or so, because then we come into the period just before the thing finished. And that I do remember clearly, when we got to Dek Le Sam. And we then took the lead as a battalion again. And it was, in fact, the day before the surrender, which I'm more sure was the 1st of April. So it must have been the 30th, 31st of March. And this one had one's platoon, of course, totally with one then, you know. And we were then really going forward one mid-morning up a road which led to some high ground about a mile away. And I can quite distinctly picture this, that to one's right there was a small cliff, 10, 15 feet high, rising ground going away. And then to your left, going down into a gorge, and a dog's leg, and you came round the corner, and then up ahead of you, perhaps for 1,000 yards and nearly a mile, the road gradually going uphill, fairly narrow road, and at the end of that hillside, which is where we finally took cover. But all the way up there, and we were marching forward as companies, there was a troop of Italian guns, one of which killed Hugh Stewart that night. Four gun, that's all, and they were shelling in a fairly regular pattern. And you know, you've got the short and the over and the sort of close one, and then the one just up the hill. And this is where I certainly remember we were going forward and thinking, my God, we've now got a mile of this, now we're marching at ordinary speed. And your comment earlier that don't panic, you know, no running, this very much applied here, because you were marching forward, it was uphill, the pace wasn't terribly fast. And the first thing one came to was a little 800-weight pickup, which of ours, which had been knocked out, and a couple of youngsters lying there, one with the head off, I think, or very badly hit. And it was there one really, one was leading one's platoon, and psychologically, this would have been a nice time to take cover, you know. Nobody was taking it, you just moved forward. And it seemed a long way.
How were your companies actually deployed on the road? Were they in
single file?
What sort of interval were you maintaining between men?
I'm sure, between men, not very much, because if I was thinking that this was 1,000 yards to a mile, I mean, really the difference, you either had the gaps between platoons, you could have the gaps between individuals, but the flow of men in the road vis-a-vis any shelling would have been much the same. So, as I recall this, one had one's section, a gap of 10 yards or so, another section. So just one little snake going up, and one was leading it with one sergeant. And it was single file, one company, platoon, a gap, another company. And some transport had gone up, because and the shelling was not intense, but I suppose there was a round of salvo of four every, I can't guess this length, 3 or 4 minutes. Pretty regular intervals as one was going up. Now, where's the close one going to arrive this time? You know?
Did you lose any?
I didn't lose any of two, and I don't think the company did there. The ones who had been knocked out in the truck obviously were ahead of us, and I think they must have gone forward in the first company. But it was blind shelling to the extent that they were ranging on the road, and it was a dog's leg, and I think probably covered, you know, from their point of view, except they knew where the road was.
How did you keep momentum going then, when you were under fire?
Well, I think it was kept going for you, in that the battalion snake going forward was moving at a certain pace, so you had no chance of either moving faster or more slowly, you know.
So it's a collective momentum.
It's a collective momentum, but it's one that